This is a production of Cornell University.
You all hear me from here? Yes. So I inadvertently sent my slide to Richard this afternoon. So do you remember that picture, the big red barn with all the blooming tulips? It's actually about to get here. So I'm presenting quickly today. The last DCI working group, and that is the Graduate and Professional Student Center working group, one of the eight areas of focus of the most recent, the March 2013 DCI document. And we asked to wait until present to the very end, hoping that our survey would be completed. The results probably will be ready to around the first of May. How many of you have received and responded to a survey about the Big Red Barn, the secret focusing on dying posh? I think it's a small and representative sample simply because the unit that was doing it really wanted to avoid survey fatigue and not survey students who had been surveyed multiple times this year with other surveys. So if you get it, please respond, because you're representing a much larger population with your response. But what we'll do is, when those results are ready, send them to the GTSA leadership, and we'll let you decide how if you want that to be discussed at a meeting, because we would like broad student input once the group summarizes the results of the survey and begins to make recommendations. We have a number of members on that group. It's not too late to join. We haven't met this semester. We spent spring and fall, mostly spring, with some of the early part of fall finalizing the survey. And then we ran into the issue of there were a number of other surveys going out from the housing and from the graduate school itself starting in January. And two meetings ago, I got a couple of names of people who were interested in my working group. And we're happy to continue to add members. Because as a result of the survey, we will then make recommendations about food service, about purpose, multi-purpose use of the Graduate Student Center. So that was one of the things that I wanted to talk about in the report. As most of you know, during the summer, the restabilization of the barn, the Big Red Barn project, which had been in the planning stage for a long time, so the GTCI working group is not taking any credit for that. It was completed, and I hope you've had an opportunity to talk to Chris. If you didn't get to attend the reopening reception, where there were a number of remarkable things to be able to discuss about the barn, I hope that some of you had a chance to talk to Chris or some of the staff there. But I want you to save the date for February 6th, 2017. You'll write it down. How many of you are going to be here? I hope to. How many of you do not plan to be here, but there's always a chance you might be here? You don't have to raise your hand. Do you know who we're going to be celebrating on February 6th, 2017? I'm going to do a successful if you were born in the same year as the family of the winner. That is can you do a special program or a name tag or something? Okay. But one of the things that our working group anticipates being involved in is working with the Big Red Barn Advisory Committee on planning that celebration. And lunch will be invited, so even if you're not here, and it'll be gone for 1 or 2 years. Wouldn't it be fun to come back and talk to the members? So one of the things that the group will be focusing on, particularly throughout the summer and the fall, will be looking at multi-purpose uses of the Big Red Barn and the dining options that are available there. We've known for quite a while that that is something that graduate students are interested in, and we're hoping the survey will give us some much-needed information to move forward, making proposals and then thinking vendors to the changes that people would ask for. So let me just, Janet said that she's been here for over two and a half years now, and it's the first time she's been invited to had the opportunity to come and talk to the GTSA about her office of one does. We were counting the other day. So many of our offices in the graduate school are offices of one. So she will talk about what her office does, but really it's just one of her office. But let me ask if you have questions. This is the 8 of 8 working group report. And again, we will have a much larger report once the survey is completed. We'll report those to you. And then the next step, our work group will be making recommendations based on the survey and your input. Any questions?
Oh, yeah. I'm curious. You said that you're at least considering the idea of bringing an outside vendor. Is that? I've never heard that.
Well, I'm going to look at all of the options that might be available. Because I know I've heard, at least I think there were two outside things that graduate students have mentioned that we'd like to consider. We'll see what the options are from a business and from a financial perspective. So we didn't want to go into a survey right now and make our decisions. It's an incredible time and an only moment. Other guidance you would give to our committee. Like I said, we haven't had this semester. We scheduled our first meeting a couple of times, hoping to align it with when the results are available. So we will meet in early May for the first time this semester. So there's still time to input to our agenda and comments you want to share. Well, we hope that it's by the first of May, maybe even the last week of April. We will. We'll come up with a report and executive summary that as quickly as we can, so we can send that to you. And then the working group will meet and begin to develop recommendations based on the survey. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen.
You're welcome.
Before we move to the next presentation, just have a focus to ask, are there any new business items that want to be added today?
Yes, can you have a
presentation? Are there any seconds? A moment.
Yes.
Okay, so we will add Resolution A for consideration in new business. And now we'll move to the presentation by Jenna from the Office of Graduate Student Life.
Hello everyone, my name is Daniel May. I know some of you I don't know, and I was talking to Richard when we went to the Ivy Summit together, and I said, you know, I've never given a presentation to GTSA about Office of One. But I have to say that it's an Office One, but I have lots of collaborators and lots of partners to make this work. So I thought this would be a nice opportunity to explain a little bit about what the Office of Student Life does for graduate students and to explain a little bit about why. So again, my name is Jayla LeMay. I have 3 points in this talk. One is I'm just going to give you a brief background to who I am and what the office is about. And then I'm also going to talk about health as far as why a healthy student life is what we're looking for. And then finally, I'm going to talk a little bit more. What I think you're going to be most interested in is really what do I do as far as what do I do for graduate students. So go ahead and start. So just my brief background, I have a master's in health education from SUNY Cortland in 1999.
I then went and worked for a family medicine residency program in the Department of Family Medicine down at East Carolina University in North Carolina for a few years. And then I came up here and I worked at the College of Veterinary Medicine with our PhD life sciences students for about 10 years, and then recently moved over to the graduate school. So I have about 13 years of experience here at Cornell, and mostly all with PhD students. So healthy student life. So anybody know what student life means or what that's about? That's sort of the... All right, see everybody looking like, yeah, what is this? This is what I'm doing. Anyway, so I wanted to point out, as far as student life, what student life is, it fosters academic and intellectual ability. It creates a climate to reinforce learning. These are what offices do that have student life contained to them. We're concerned about personal and professional development, so that's something that our office spends a lot of time with. We talk about career and transitions beyond academics. We want to support an environment that supports diversity. And finally, we respond to the issues and needs of all constituents, faculty, staff, students, outside, inside. That's what student life is about. Or better yet, I like this, this is a quote, it's really all the stuff to do between what's required of you as far as academically and everything else about your experience. So when you think about student life, you can think about it, everything outside of the classroom, but it does matter as far as the impact that you have on your classroom experiences. So I want to show you this wheel. This is a health wheel. There's lots of different components of health that you could look at. But what I want to point out is that these are the components of health: physical, intellectual, emotional, social, career, and spiritual. It's just one model. There's many. But what's nice about this is that we're applying this to student life because of two things. Historically, physical health is what's been prevailed, and what you think of health for an academic institution is intellectual health, as far as that's why you're here as scholars trying to learn. What I'm showing you is that we're applying this whole model to student life to give you a sense that we do value the wholeness of the student, so the one-body experience. We want to make sure that we capture everything that's going on in your personal life and then also your academic life. So that's something that we're trying to do. So go ahead. So I'll just mention real briefly, health and academics is established in the literature as far as that health and your academic performance are linked. As far as the healthier you are, the better off that you will do academically. In addition, graduate students, as you know, you are the future leaders in society, and so the idea is that if we can help have you support a healthy student life experience, hopefully you'll take that into your future leadership roles and help to promote health and wellness of everyone. Finally, it is acknowledged in the strategic plan as far as promoting the health and well-being of students, undergraduate, graduate, and professionals as a foundation for academic and life success. So Cornell here has said that this is a good thing that we will do. So as a result, here is our mission. It's a little wordy, so I apologize, but it does summarize a little bit of what I do. One is I'm a source of support, advocacy, and promotion for Cornell graduate and professional students. I serve as a hub of coordination and services to that campus and student life experience at Cornell of our students. We want to promote a culture that supports a healthy and holistic student life experience and that we value personal development and future success. And as such, we have a lot of life skills kind of opportunities for students. So what do? I have two main functions here. One is I assist students individually with whatever kinds of questions that they may have, so I can talk to students, also faculty and staff. That's about half of my time that I spend talking to folks about your career's academic performance as it relates to student life. In addition, we do a lot of programming, and the idea is that hopefully we're getting ahead of that. So if I'm talking to a lot of students and I learn that, wow, mentors may there are some issues with mentoring as far as students and communication with mentors, maybe we should have a workshop about how to have better communication with your mentors. So they do work in parallel, but I work with a lot of other folks to help make that link here. But so half my time I'm meeting with students, and then the other half of my time we're doing a lot of programming. So I'll talk a little bit more. So here's some of the examples of the concerns that I've seen. And I think I don't think I've seen it all yet, but difficult relationships with advisor, chair resignation, academic issues, grad work, financial funding, grievances, immigration, graduate student injuries, wellness, general welfare concerns, reducing students, disability, housing, legal, Title IX. So whenever there's a question, just feel free to use me as a hub as far as this is what I've experienced in talking to students and trying to figure out what they do. I do want you to know that how I approach this is when students come to me, I'm not looking to make this any more difficult for them, and we will work out together what makes sense as far as who should be contacted. And sometimes there's nobody at all. The student will leave and they'll go out and do what they need to do. Other times they may want me to contact the DGS or the chair to be more involved. So we negotiate that, except in cases that deal with Title IX or sexual violence. So if there's something larger that's going on, harm to self, harm to others, sexual violence or any Title IX, then I have to get other folks involved. And I tell the student that, but that's how I tend to operate. So I have a card here. I'm going to pass this out. So I'm hoping that in your role as GPSA folks, that you can help me tell your peers about what I can do. I typically see probably about 130 students in a semester. And like I said, it's a whole range of variety of sources. I'm not a mental health professional, so I don't do counseling per se, but I try to get students to where they need to get the support so that they can get the help that they may need in that. So that's my way to catch and such. Okay? So like I said, the other part of my time is about programming, and so what do I try to do? So I try to do prevention-based programming, and how that works is we're trying to demystify the graduate education experience. So hopefully we give students information that doesn't seem so mysterious and that they'll be able to succeed. We want to normalize the diversity of experiences, perspectives, and goals that we have. So an example of this would be a lot of our efforts about non-academic careers and trying to help empower students to be able to get the resources that they need if they want to pursue non-academic careers. We want to empower grad students with concrete information and skills. So you may be getting some information from your chairs and your departments. We're not necessarily trying to overstep them, but they may not tell you all that's in the code of legislation. So what does happen if a chair resigns? And so that's a source of information that might help to decrease some anxiety and some level of stress if you knew all that. And finally, we want to champion and embrace the holistic approach to graduate student life. And that explains my other one. So I just going to give you two examples. This is the Perspective Series. So this is the Health and Wellness series that I put on. We have this every semester, anything from perfectionism, procrastination. We do a personal vision statement. We're taking a walk tomorrow around Beebe Lake and then come back and have some lunch. So they're real low-key, but the idea is just to have a forum where we can talk about health and wellness issues that impact graduate students. They've been well-received. I have probably about 40, 50 students at each one come to it, so I hope to you that you can help advertise it. But again, the idea is hopefully we're getting out ahead of it and helping to increase the profile of health and wellness for graduate students. And I should mention, a lot of these presenters, I present some, but I also rely heavily on my outside campus partners to be able to come in and be the content experts of certain sessions. And then another session, another course, the cash course series, so that's something that my office will continue to do, and this is about financial literacy. So this semester, what we have is a web-based webinar. We've collaborated with CU CERTL, and so we're offering this every other week, or every week, excuse me, and showcasing it as far as financial information for graduate and professional students. And so here's some other programs. I didn't show you the flyers of each of them, but I just wanted to mention a couple things. I want to pilot a summer series about resilience. So there's been a lot of work with resilience as far as, you know, what do students need to be able to bounce back from stress or anxiety or a situation that happens that might not be as planned. And so there are some tools that we can actually teach to increase our resilience. So I'm looking to do that for the summer. Transitions, I also sponsor a specific session for first-year students. That one we continue to improve every year, but the idea is really to get the first years together and give them a space so that they can be able to network with one another and then also learn some additional kinds of things as they need them. Women's professional development, so I've piloted or combined efforts with GP Women and doing some series with them. Writer's Retreat, that's something that the writing profile that the graduate school has helped to conduct, so they have a week-long writer's retreat. Communication sessions, so we've done some sessions with EARS where the communication part of EARS is taught to graduate students as far as how to communicate. Sexual violence prevention, we've done a couple sessions we're piloting and we'll be having some more piloted in the future, and then other sessions as appropriate. So I want you all to know that in addition to letting students know that they can see me, if you have some other ideas that would help increase the health and wellness of our graduate students, please let me know. I'm always looking for partners, and students are great partners to come up with some new ideas and help me think about what we could do for programs. And then I also want to mention, finally, a relationship with the DO Students Office, so Kent, I'm glad you're here. So I want you to know that I also have a deadline appointment to the DO Students Office, which has been really crucial as far as getting access to services and resources that are available to all students, not just undergraduates, but that do matter to our graduate students. So I work with the Office of Student and Community Support, and underneath that, crisis management team. So that is when a student has a crisis, a fire, a death, car accident. I'm the liaison for that group to go out there to work with our graduate students and then come back, okay, what kind of academic considerations need to be made? And so then we'll talk to the department and try to negotiate that. In addition, the community support team, so when a tragedy occurs or something of trauma happens in the unit, we'll go in. I'm one of the team members that goes in and says, I'm sorry about your loss, let's talk about it. And so we have some discussion about that. There's some programming opportunities through the Office of Student Community Support. We still work on those, but I want you to know that Women's Resource Center, the EARS program, Cornell Mind Center, and Ordinary People are located through there. So we haven't figured out all the ways that they can help with graduate students, but they have your yoga and your stress management. Summons and weekly announcement is a result of those programs being available to graduate students as well. And they have given me an opportunity to network with other resources around campus, and I just want to mention some of the university campus councils. There's a mental health and welfare council that's a staff, students. I think you have a couple of representatives that sit on this as well. We talk about the mental health of the campus, and then sexual violence prevention as well. I'm also a member of the mental health programmers group, and that is an actual active group that's working on resilience as the focus this year. And so it's been good to talk about, okay, how can we make resilience for graduate students? So it's not really specific to where you're at. It will be different, but it recognizes that we all could use resilience, and we all could, you know, when a crisis happens, it matters less that you're a graduate student, but more that, hey, the crisis is here. So that's some of my efforts with the Dean of Students Office, and, yeah. So I just wanted to thank you again for the opportunity to let you know a little bit about what my office does, but if you have any questions or comments or discussion points, I'm happy to take them, or any thoughts, or, go ahead, please.
I have two questions.
What
is my
data
temperature
here? Yeah.
Where you are physically located?
Yep. I'm in Caldwell Hall, 384. Mm-hmm. It's part of the graduate school.
All right. And then the other question was, at the University Assembly, I recently became aware of the Ombudsman's office.
Yep.
That was my first awareness that there's this place where anyone can go, and they can, and it sounds like you have kind of a similar role.
Yep. And so we communicate a lot with the ombudsman, so it wouldn't be uncommon if a student came to me that I would call them and ask for some policy kind of advice. I would refer students out to the ombudsman if I think that they could help them greater than I can. The nice thing about the ombudsman's office is it's completely confidential, and they are the experts on policies. I'm not quite sure that I know about policies that I can get you started, but if you wanted to go to find out the policies for tenure, I'm not really sure. So that would be the office to go to find that out. And so I'll work with them to make sure that the student knows the right place to go. But sometimes it's meeting with me and then one more. And I try to be sensitive to that. And if I think they can get something different from the ombudsman, like I said, the policy reading. And then also the ombudsman, Charlie Walcock, is a former faculty member. And so sometimes it's helpful for students to go to him to talk through how would you handle this kind of situation. Or to, you know, you're going to negotiate something. Well, why don't you run that by this faculty member that knows nothing about your situation but does know about the inner workings of Cornell to give you another perspective. So I've done that before as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Any questions? Go ahead.
Can is there a major thing where there's so many resources, but sometimes, you know, given the situation, I don't know which one. And kind of like, well, like, matter, or do I cap what, you know, like, and is there at least something like, if you have this situation, you call this person, if you have that situation, call this office, is there...
There is on the website, so if you go to this website, there's a resource page that you can look up, and it's commonly used resources for graduate students. It's not written like you're suggesting, which might be a great way to do it, but it talks a little bit about each unit that a graduate student can go to. So I think that has that information that you're seeking. But, you know, if you're talking to somebody or you're not sure yourself who to go to, please feel free to send me an email or come see me, and I'm happy to get you to the right place. I don't spend a lot of time trying to figure out what your situation is if you're just looking to find out where to go, you know, right? Because I want to be, like I said, sensitive that oftentimes, you know, difficulties can lead to a lot of explanations to a lot of different offices, which can be frustrating and time-consuming. And so I'll try to get you to the right place right away, if that's what you want to do. Or if you just want to brainstorm, I'm happy to do that as well with you. Okay? Any other?
Well, firstly, thanks for doing all your work for us. But sometimes it's difficult to find time to attend some of those seminars that are useful at a point. They might not be applicable at a particular time, but when you look back, and if there was some way to maybe we pull some of them,
Yeah, I agree completely with you. And something, so the graduate school folks that do a lot of programming are talking together right now, and I think that's something that's going to come up as far as how can we catalog some of these great seminars that we're doing so the students can go to it. I'd also suggest, though, that, you know, I know that I'm limited as far as perspectives as Tuesdays and Thursdays, because that's what I can do. So if you have any availability or desire to have us to come to you, I'm more than willing to do that for my health and wellness stuff. So if there's a talk that you think, wow, my peers would like in my local unit, I'm happy to bring that to you with the expert or come in and do it myself, whatever seems to be appropriate. But I think we could get a lot of traction in that way. So keep that in mind. That's another way to partner.
Okay. We have a couple of more questions.
Okay. Thank you. So if any other questions, let me know. Thank you.
Basically the same as the same process as before, but maybe just turn it online now. But the advantage is that from next funding cycle application, people can just go in and look at the same application, and then they can reapply using some of the basic same basic information but updated. So it's going to be something that is centralized where we have all the documents for all the years, even for us like when the committee changed, we don't have access to all the old information. So this is one way for keeping track. I'll send in more detailed emails as soon as we have all the information updated. I had requested all the committee members to send me a budget request for coming chair to send me a budget request. From whatever I've heard, I don't think there's any substantial change in funding. If there's anything, please let me know by the end of the meeting so I can make a request for GPSAs for the bio and coming. Right? Any questions?
Graduate student oriented, that should be. We were
going to come to the mixer this week, but we're postponing it, and let's just keep this until TV.
I didn't hear anything from the sustainability committee, so I assume there's no update. Yeah. And then next we'll move to
regarding about how do I find the safety event? Like, I know all my friends are excited, and you know how to, like,
yell.
Oh, yeah. So, pictures and have people.
So there's a Facebook.
Allow all the time
university. We've seen successive waves of cuts that have reduced our total staff population by 10%. And the English Students Office, as well as the graduate school, are no exceptions. This year, we are across the board seeing each of the divisions and colleges having to reduce their budgets by something that amounts to about 2.5%. Don't quote me on that exact number. It's in round numbers around 2.5%. That's a lot of money to go back to the center to solve a structural deficit at the center. So I'm hoping that maybe this is the darkest before dawn, that after this financial problem is settled, we can go forward with a better national economy and a better Cornell economy and see growth. However, for now, we're kind of caught solving problems with resources we currently have in hand. So, Jen and I talked to Cochrane Langford Writing students, and I'm going to try to do both. I think that the students I spoke with are agreed that I could manage to do both. The support the advocacy centers with increased direct support. At the same time, hiring an associate team, we can increase price. The search is ongoing. We have three terrific candidates coming in. One this Friday from RIT, someone by the name of Michael Barkinflo. On Tuesday, a woman named Shannon Lundin will come to us from Case Western Reserve. And then on Friday, Meredith Grant, who is our current judicial administrator, will be sending the data. The position is open until filled, so if there are qualified candidates out there, they can still apply. We will continue to roll right along until we find the best person. Over the last year and a half or so, we've lost seven staff, four of whom were very important, had very important roles and were associate deans and assistants. So, for example, Catherine Holmes left in January. She was the associate dean with me after student leadership liaison community activities. Last year, we lost Tammy Hall, who was the associate dean for the Office of Community and Student Community Support. Then, last year as well, we lost Cal Brombach, who was the director of the Patcom Center and associate dean. In order to work through these changes, we merged the Patcom Center with residential programs to save a little money there. And as you probably might appreciate, hiring new staff is a very complicated and bureaucratic process of Cornell. So in order for us to get one position back and change for all these that we've lost, we go through a process of creating a job description, then taking it and putting it together with a staffing plan. That then goes to a waiver committee, which is made up of staff in the division. They then opine on its merits, and then they pass it along to the vice president for approval. We've gone through this long and slow process over this academic year to come out with permission to serve. Okay? So we've gone through that process. The search committee is made up of four students, as well as eight staff, including academic staff. At this juncture, we're pretty far along the road. I would like to think that I would invite you to interview these candidates when they're here next week. We'll make available the itinerary for each of these people during the day, and you're welcome to join. The students are meeting these candidates for lunch in each case. Each of these candidates are making presentation for 15, which will be both a brief presentation and a conversation with these people. These people have very interesting qualifications, and it would really be a shame if we were to lose the opportunity to consider these people seriously as candidates for these positions. So my appeal to you is, one, let's go forward and do both. I'm working with our senior staff in the Institute to come up with a plan that would redirect our existing resources to apply them to the direct support of our advocacy centers. I hope that by later this week, when I report to the student assembly, who also approved a version of the resolution you have in front of you, Resolution 53, I'll report back to them and let them know what we've been able to do to respond to what I agree with is a legitimate need
definitely true if you retake Cornell Sun. We invite an incredibly diverse and capable group of students to come to campus. But I think we are open to criticism when it comes to the support of students when they are here. And the Advocacy Center is not the least Janet LeMay and the graduate school. Support those students who might otherwise be somehow as seen from time to time during their time at Cornell. So, at the Nina Student, it's not moving all the way on that one. We really do need it. It's really about how we manage and marshal our resources to do it. So, I would beg your patience in the process and invite you all to participate. I know that we're criticized in the both resolutions for not involving students earlier on, and I would just let you know that it has not been our practice to involve students during the process of determining what our needs are. Of course, we consult and we talk with everybody who's in the trenches with students, but we haven't to date consulted with students specifically. But as soon as the search is approved, we invite students to join the search, which we've done this time. And as people come to campus, we'd love to think that students will have every opportunity to give us their impression of these people and their ability to really be wonderful additions to our campus. Lastly, without further ado, we're bringing together these three offices under one umbrella because we see a lot of similarities in the work, a lot of complementarity in the efforts. So, for example, having the Women's Resource Center join with A3C, with SDDI, which is Student Development University Initiative, and with the LGBT Resource Center, makes a lot of sense. They're student advocacy centers who already work closely together. Having them together under one umbrella seems to make a lot of sense and should lead to a much more complementary way in which they work together. So I'll end there and take questions. And certainly appreciate your forbearance as we try to solve this problem.
So in the interest of time, we only have 10 more minutes for discussion. I'll suggest we continue the discussion and move the vote to next meeting. Is there a motion to do so? Yes. Is that second? Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. We'll do this by unanimous consent. Is there any opposed?
Well, can we, before we do that, consider a motion to extend time by 5 minutes?
Again, another question. Yes. Is there a second for that? Sure. We'll do this again by unanimous consent. Is any opposed to the idea of extending the discussion for 5 minutes, so if we'll move to the next discussion, if we'll move to the next business item? Seeing none, we'll have a 15-minute discussion. And let's move back to the old motion about moving the poll to next meeting for a second, and we'll do this by unanimous consent. Are there any opposed to the idea of moving the poll to next meeting?
Opposed. I just thought, can we do this maybe after we close for the 15-minute cleanup? Let's take some more. Support student activities and student organizations broadly, And when you think about the nature of the programming that happens in the other areas, there's a lot of complementarity there. So the idea of bringing them together into one group seems to make a lot of sense. And I won't belabor this except to say that this has been vetted up and down the university because the man who reduced the number of direct reports that he interviewed, it's just not made. This may be a non-issue to some. I don't think Jevon feels the same way I do. But I have a major I love working with these people, so I don't necessarily wish to reduce it, but it's not practical for the dean students to have that many practice scores. So this helps reduce that number too. I consider that a byproduct.
So yeah, so I'm just trying to do the math on the number of actual positions. So it's three, and now we've got three.
Well, we're not replacing any other deans, so there are seven in play if you look at all of them over the last several years. But at the moment, we're getting one hire to try to organize ourselves appropriately, given our reduced
service. And then those other jobs, the vacant job descriptions, those are no longer available with DPO.
That's correct, but what we've done is we've redistributed those responsibilities.
Right, okay. Just a matter
of time. I just wanted to provide like one piece of clarification and kind of bring some more information to why we organize students to oppose this position. First is a point of clarification when the honor refers to doing both. In our original proposal to the undergraduate student assembly, if we proposed this position be dissolved into three separate salary lines for assistant dean positions to sit within the Asian Asian American Center, the LGBT Resource Center, and the Women's Resource Center. Reason being, these services currently being provided are insufficient in the amount of funds and staffing we are receiving for the actual services that are supposed to support these different communities on campus are borderline horrible. And that's what I also want to kind of bring forward today, kind of the scope of the services that are actually being provided on campus, both for undergraduates, graduates, faculty, and staff. Take, for example, the LGBT Resource Center, which has one singular individual who's the director of the center working for the center on top of a budget of about $27,000 in comparison to, say, University of Pennsylvania's LGBT Resource Center, which has six members of staff as well as $300,000. But that one individual is not tasked to necessarily take care of the undergraduate LGBTQ+ community, the graduate professional student on campus, as well as the faculty and staff and alumni of this university. And obviously, that the scope of one division of one advocacy center and the problem is the services provided on the ground, essentially being unable to be provided to the individual working at these centers, are overworked and underfunded. The same thing can be said for the Women's Resource Center on campus, which receives $0 from the university, and in fact, receives $46,000 from the undergraduate population. Similar can be said for the UPC as well. Generally, our opposition position is less of a position in and of itself. I think this position good for the university, but the problem is we don't need another person to talk about services that are not being provided. And quite frankly, the reason why and unfortunately it's funny, but the thing is that they're not being provided. The issue here is whether we prioritize leadership over these organizations or actually provide them support and they actually do their jobs. Because I agree that I think he's right, and a lot of these groups do overlap and they do work together, but the problem is that they cannot continue to do further work or further initiatives to address more university-wide issues. Addressing the Women's Resource Center, Sector Wilds on campus, Brayden and on campuses. I mean, it's half of those battles because there's only one person having to handle the ship of all of these different communities. Not to mention that all of these individuals in the Refugee Center are also crisis managers for the university and sit on every single committee for the university to represent these communities. And so for us, our priority is direct support and services for students rather than individuals to lead that support. Because at the end of the day, these individuals will still be under resourced, still under support, and no vision that this decision brings forward and actually be actual. Sorry about that. And Jen and I don't necessarily disagree on the need. I mean, it's there for sure. That's why I want to try to use this opportunity to do both.
So I want to ask about that point. The opening from framing logic when you started talking about other funds and resolution was this is a time of economic difficulty, and in a time of economic difficulty, we have to take it up to 10%. We're all familiar with that kind of logic, right? So, in the frame of that kind of logic, how I'm wondering if you could talk more about the actual ability to do both. Given that seems, at least the impression that I got from the dialogue, that that kind of like, oh, now in response to the response, now these folks are doing both. So if there was no folks are doing both before, if the economic conditions have not changed and we're still in that environment of economic difficulty, how is doing both now possible when it wasn't before?
Well, basically what we're looking at all of the things that we do, all the staff that we have currently in their roles, and we're looking to allocate those resources toward just a matter of bringing them into this orbit. Much of what they do is already bears a resemblance to it. So I would beg your forbearance in not going into much detail because we're still in conversations. And before I announce this in public, I need to be able to sit with the staff and talk about this. But the fact of the matter is that I think we found a way to organize ourselves such that we'll be able to provide support for these very important centers and at the same time not forego other things. In fact, we actually may help in certain respects when it comes to the programming that we do in certain communities on campus. So I don't want to not answer your question, except that it would not be fair to the staff who are going to be affected if I started to disclose what we plan to do, what we hope to do before it's time. I hope that by the end of this week, I will be able to be more explicit about this. But as you know, we only have so much, we only have so many people, we only have so many dollars, I mean, we have very few of us to move around. But I think we have found a way together, our senior staff working together over, now days, come up with a way that I think will solve the problem, at least in large part, not entirely. We're not talking about random positions, but we're talking about kind of the reallocation and redirection of resources toward this really important need that we have.
So I think you're both in agreement that this position at some point will be necessary for the future programming at Cornell. But do you think that it would be important, given the funding, the lack of funding resources available to these organizations, to have someone like this advocating at the senior level for these organizations?
Yeah, so yeah, I think it's important that we have an individual that mentioned to advocate for these groups, but again, that's also another issue. We shouldn't have to hire an individual to advocate for the interests of groups that have already been brought up before now. These issues that have been brought up, these issues of underfunding and understaffing the centers have been brought forward since 2008, where these centers should be staffed up with 4 members of full-time staff. A lot of these issues have existed, they've gone unheard, or at least whether they have been heard, they've not been acted upon. I think having an advocate is important, but the problem is at the end of the day, there are still minimal resources for these groups, so minimal resources for them to be able to navigate and bring to these groups. And at the end of the day, if we have a salary line available that is, like, say, the salary at this position, it would be much more prudent to use that for actual direct support for students rather than someone just to talk about support. And I think, like, down the line, this would be something that could be just could be a value position at the point in which we can't provide the basic services now. There's no point in finding the leading them and only giving them a further vision to act upon, so that they don't have the funds nor the physical manpower or womanpower to actually do that work. There's not much hope for this position. And speaking to a member of candidates for this position, after seeing the orientation that they must take beneath them, they do definitely see this as a very impossible position, given that all of the different units that they will be governing under, although they might be similar, are not quite radically different. Dealing with students going through identity crisis is different than managing baby hall and computational slope today. Right? There are differences in the actual interests of these units, and to be quite frank, all of these different units are drastically underfunded and understaffed relative to other institutions. And before I finish, I would like to respond specifically to this point of reallocating resources of staff to help support these centers, which is kind of an issue, because if they individually are taken from any of the units governed under this position to help support these other centers, it's further depriving other student services that are already bare bones at this university. We're very concerned about reorganizing or removing members of staff within these units to help support these groups, although it will provide additional support, it will still create other services that will provide other students. And really, there needs to be new funding created and positions created if there aren't enough for the available legitimately support students on campus.
So, as part of the option of the resolution, I just want to bring forward another point, which is that one of the things the resolution is about is precisely the opaque process through which this position was created. And that Dean Hubble admitted that it was a long process, and also that diverse students on campus have not been supported while they're at Cornell as much as we may invite them to. And this is definitely one of those cases where, because these different organizations were not brought to the table during the process that was admitted to be long, that could have had where they could have had a voice to more clearly articulate the exact needs of the community. That this is obviously, I think, a point that the administration needs to consider for the future, that they need to actually take peer governance into consideration.
I think we need to be reminded of that over and over again, to be perfectly honest with you.
somebody who will bring reinforcements to these issues. And if we don't find that person, we won't hire. So, you know, the next three candidates, I would invite you to look at very carefully. Ask all the hard questions. You know, and if they rise to the occasion and they look like people who really can make a difference here, then we ought to invite them to come. Otherwise, we should not spend these resources on someone who can't do that. So, you know, I think we're kind of in agreement on that. I mean, we're looking for someone who can really help us change the climate of support for all of our students.
Definitely not too late.
and also say that we're still in the process of hearing back from all different graduate diversity organizations to understand information as well for their resolution. So, for example, we already have support from the SAGA, Indigenous Graduate Students Association, which is more of a well to consider it. So, we're still waiting to get a couple more files as well.
Let me say that. I mean, Jan finds it from the same Jan Cross. She's a one person. You mentioned herself. She's a one person office and does terrific work. And we do everything we can to help her in the work that she does. But again, that's another case in point that Jenna made.
Okay, we'll go back to the motion about moving the vote to the next meeting since we haven't approved it. We'll do this by another subject. Are there any questions on voting to moving the vote? Okay, cool. So, thanks. And we'll move to our next business, which is the voting members' election. And now we can say, yes.
I suggest adding some discussion time to the vote.
Yes, we'll be doing that. Yes.
We're just in the method.
Yeah, we'll be that. Yeah, we'll make sure we don't have time for that. Yeah. Okay, so today we'll be electing new 14 voting members to the we will divide this into four houses, and depending on which field you are in, you will form into the four women. I guess we should look at this later. But we will divide into four houses. And each caucus will then elect their own voting members. So, first of all, we'll have three seats for biological sciences, three for humanities, four for physical sciences, which will have at least one engineering and one non-engineering, and we'll have four seats for social sciences. So, may we have biological sciences here, humanities in the center, and physical sciences over here, and social sciences all the way to the back. Okay, for humanities, we'll have Christine, Kristen, and Jenny. Let's clap. For biological sciences, we have Kira and Chris, and Rachel. Thanks for coming.
Wednesday, to sit in and be a part of, it's like an interview process.
and is interested.
Yep. Motion to adjourn? No?
No, I have one thing. Yeah, we were all so the.
I thought we were also voting on your position.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So one announcement is about a new working group, looking for graduate students to sit in it. It's about the university is going to be revising policy 6.4. One that is the university's procedure for addressing discrimination, harassment, and sexual assault. I think they will only have three meetings. One is on April 13th, and that's like following up meeting in the next 2 weeks. So it will be like before the end of the semester. But there's only three more meetings, and they're really in need of graduate students. So if you're interested, talk to me afterwards, and I can send you up to come up to people there.
Thank you. I would like to thank everybody for being part of the discussion tonight. If you have any additional thoughts on the resolution, amendments, things you'd like to express in the next session through your own presentation, please feel free to follow up with me.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.